In today's episode, we have Trina Talukdar. She's the founder of Kranti along with Vani and Robin. Vani and Robin is not with us. Trina is with me. Welcome, Trina.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Kranti is a non-government organization, an NGO from Mumbai's red light area that empowers them to become agents of social change. Kranti believes that when girls from these challenging situations have access to the same education, training and opportunities that people from privileged backgrounds have, one can create an exceptional leadership for the future ahead. So it is all about having similar opportunities that what Kranti and their endeavor is. So welcome, Trina.
Thank you.
So let's begin, Trina. Why don't you tell me a little about the start of this journey? When did you begin? And what was the inspiration? What was the turning point in your life to, you know, get into this space? Because I would believe that there is a lot of mafia. There is a lot, at least that's the impression that most of us have. There would be a lot of, bottlenecks. And as a young girl, Trina, how did you overcome these challenges?
So many difficult questions right at the beginning, but I'll try my best. So I started working in Kali Ghat, which is one of the red light areas in Kolkata, when I was going to college in Kolkata at St. Xavier's. And I was working with this organization there, teaching the children of sex workers. And during my time in Kali Ghat, I think I was really left with this impression of the potential of the women and children that I met in the red light area, you know. What fast learners they were, how much grit and resilience they had, how hard they were working to give their children education, to support their families. And I think that's the impression I was left with. And I was wondering, you know, I wasn't sure exactly what to do with it. So I went to do my master's in social work, and at the same time was, you know, visiting, learning about other anti-trafficking organizations in India, learning about the space, which is where I met Robin and Bani Di, who went on to be my co-founders. Robin and Bani were also working, volunteering at various anti-trafficking homes because of their own interests, and that's what they were passionate about doing. And so we met each other between these sort of organizations. And we really felt like there was no space currently in India where these young girls and women from the red light area could go and achieve their full potential. There wasn't much long-term investment in their healing from trauma, in their long-term education, and definitely not their leadership, right? And so we wanted to start our own organization where we work with fewer number of girls, but work with them over a long period of time to really bring transformative changes in these women. And that's how we started off. And when we first started Kranti and the girls started coming in, we said, you know, Kranti is a place where the girls can decide and dream to be whatever they want to be. And it is our job to find them the opportunities to be those things. And whenever we would ask the girls, what do you want to do? They would always say, I want to be a teacher, but teach the children of sex workers because no one admits us in school. Or I want to be a therapist and work with other young children who faced abuse because when I did, I didn't have a supportive place to go to. And so really our vision then came from hearing these things from the girls. Our vision is driven by what we heard from the girls, and which is that these girls are so passionate about going back to their communities and solving many of the problems they grew up facing. And they have so much, you know, resilience and grit and understanding of these social problems, having lived them firsthand, that if we can build the leadership skills and the social justice education in them, then these girls are our best bet for the next generation of social change agents.
So when you tell me about getting them into schools and getting girls from spaces like this into mainstream society, I mean, I don't know how many schools really would really be open to taking them on as co-students with other people coming in from backgrounds where they've not had this sort of an exposure, because there is such a taboo, right? So when you talk about mainstream, would those be English medium schools? Because at the end of the day, you know, to go ahead and become a leader, there is the reality that, you know, English is the language of mobility for most people, you know. So how did you bridge that gap?
In the beginning, it was definitely, you're right, challenging for us to have our girls admitted in mainstream schools. I mean, in the first few years, and you should hear from Jayashree about this for sure. But in the first few years, our girls were going to government schools because we weren't able to get them admission in private schools. And then, you know, we sort of managed that. And now Our girls go to very premier schools, Weinberg Allen, which is a premier boarding school in Dehradun, People Grove School, which is another great boarding school. They go to premier universities like Ashoka University in Delhi, and you'll hear from Rani about her university experience. So I think we built that credibility over time, and it was like our girls' hard work and the things they were doing, and you know, when their stories started coming out in the media, that I think the mainstream started opening up to the possibility of girls from the red light era, the girls we were supporting, being integrated in the mainstream education system.
So tell me something, Trina, what about the obstacles you face when you go into a place like that? Because it is, of course, run by mafia. And there is a whole system that if one prostitute has a daughter, they would automatically be taken into the same trade. And it's like a very, very vicious cycle. So even to break out of that entire cycle is a humongous challenge, because I have to very sadly admit that the cops, and they are very much hand in hand with the goons there. So how did you break out of that? Was that easy? How did you go about it?
We fortunately have not had to deal with the trafficking mafia. Which of course exists, but we've managed to find a niche where we don't have to, you know, come in conflict with them. So we work with daughters of sex workers in Kamathipura, and it's mostly the mothers who are currently sex workers or used to be, who hand over custody to us. So in that way...
The trafficking mafia has never ever, you've never had a challenging situation ever?
No. We've managed to, you know, there have been run-ins or whatever, but not on a regular basis, because we go through the mothers, because the mothers are willingly handing over custody to us.
Let's hear from Jayashree. So tell me, Jayashree, what was, how, when you met Trina, when did you meet? How did you start? And tell me a little bit about your journey.
So I was 10 when I first met Trina, and my mother was a sex worker 10 years back, and after that I moved to Kranti. Actually, I moved to Kranti when my dad died from HIV. So like when my dad died in the morning, at the same evening, like my mom bought a new man saying that he's your new dad. So I was very, you know, shocked. I didn't even got the time to grief about my dad, but yeah, it was all sudden. And but the stepdad was very violent, so me and my mom almost faced like domestic violence every day at home. So that's when I met Kranti, Trina, and Robin. So yeah, I was 10 years old by then.
So Trina, how do you deal with the trauma, you know, the mental trauma? I mean, I'm sure there is counseling that goes on for somebody as young as that when you go through. So do you also have in your organization counselors who work with the children?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing we work on when any girl comes to us is actually their healing and emotional well-being, because, you know, we can't do education or build anything else on top of it until the girls are in an emotionally happy, stable, resilient place. So we work in partnership with a psychotherapy clinic called Inner Space in Mumbai. And all of our girls have weekly one-on-one therapy with therapists. In addition, they do a lot of different kinds of group therapy, like art therapy or body movement therapy. Yoga and meditation are a big part of our lives at Kranti. And all of these things together is able to create a supportive environment for the girls to heal and overcome their trauma.
So Jayashree, when you've gone into mainstream, you know, into school and into work and into meeting people, has the acceptance been completely all right, or did you face any sort of resistance from people, Jayashree?
When I was young in school, I did a lot of discrimination. I did face a lot of discrimination because, you know, I didn't know how to handle the situation. I didn't know what to reply to the person when he's saying that you are from the red light area. But now I think in the mainstream, in the Kriya University where I'm studying, it's very supportive. Like even in the first semester, I have done a Kranti's activity, a workshop in my college, saying that, you know, yes, I'm from the red light area, but I am proud of it. Like that's my strength. And the mainstream has been really, you know, supportive. Every professor, even my friends. And that was very surprising for me because I wasn't used to that. Like, since childhood, it was very different experience. But yeah, now I think because I'm more confident about who I am, I'm more happy with myself. So, to be honest, it doesn't really matter to me now what people think or how they behave with me right now, because I'm proud of my background.
So people have discriminated you, but it's your inner resilience and your inner strength that's made you, you know, you're able to overcome all these, you know, obstacles. Am I getting that right?
Yes, because I think before it was very, you know, I used to feel that, yes, I shouldn't belong to the society. I'm not, you know, respectable. My mother is not suitable in the community. But I think after that, when I came to Franti and we did a lot of social justice classes and of course therapy, it really changed my mindset.
When you say that you don't bother now anymore whether people accept you or not, it obviously comes from a space of having inner resilience and having a lot of self, you know, courage that you've built in yourself. But obviously you're indicating that there is discrimination and it is only your inner strength, yeah? So not everybody is going to be as strong as you are, Jayashree. So what happens, you know, do you see that becoming a hindrance after a point for many other younger girls who are also, you know, part of the red light area and probably have not had the kind of strength, that inner strength that you have? How do you see that one can bridge that? Would you be able to talk to them? Would you stand that as an example? Or how deep is the trauma is what I think our listeners would really, really like to know.
I think from the background that I'm coming, it's very tough to be, you know, open about yourself, first of all. Like, I have been...
From every background, Jayashree, for women, it is very tough to open up. You know, women, when they have a breakup, when they women, they go through a divorce. Women, they, you know, have an abortion, which is your own body. They have difficulty to, you know, even open up. So I can't even begin to fathom how difficult it must be for you. So, yes, please share, you know, with the listeners as to how and what is it that you've done, you know, any incident that you remember in which you really, really dug deep down inside yourself to pull yourself out of a situation.
Yeah, so as I said, the situation like that for me was dealing with my stepdad, which was very tough. Like, I couldn't, and in the red light area, houses are really small. Like, if you put two steps ahead, the house is like done there. It's no more space. So staying with my stepdad in that room, it was, you know, really suffocating. I couldn't take it because I have to be in front of his face every minute of the day. So it was very tough to deal with that. But then space like Kranti came in my life where I, you know, got freedom to say what I want to do, even in the red light area. Like, I think in every part of the world, there still is discrimination just because I'm a girl and I can do certain things. So that's the whole another mindset that we have. But still, like, dealing with those and then dealing with my stepdad, it was just too much for me to take. So then I came in Kranti, and yes, I got therapy, and that helped me heal a lot. Like, I wasn't able to open up with anyone because of my past experiences that I, you know, people used to behave in a certain way when they used to get to know that I'm from the red light area. So I didn't want it to come out firstly, but then after coming to Kranti, you know, it gave me strength to be who I am, because in the red light area, not in the red light area, but like, yeah, that's another thing. When people think, you know, I live in the most dangerous place in the world, it's the brothel. But to be honest, it's not for me. Like, can you imagine an area full of mothers? So for me, red light area was my home. Like, it was the safest place for me. But once, you know, people from the outsider, customers come in, they are the one that I'm afraid of. You know, they stare at me like I'm an alien or something, or they're always, you know, looking forward to take an advantage of me. So it was the outside people from whom I felt more afraid or discriminated, but not in my community at all. So
you've said such a beautiful thing, that you were raised by so many mothers. You know, and I think this is the line actually that I will have in the podcast for all the listeners to hear, that, you know, when you are in a brothel and there are, you know, so many women who are in this trade, but each children there are raised by mothers. It gives me the goosebumps right now, Jayashree, when I'm hearing this from you. But Jayashree, when you say that the red light area is your home, do you see yourself living there for really long, or are you looking at shifting out of there and having a different kind of an environment?
To be honest, I don't really want to go out of the, like, so many people, you know, from so many interviews that I have done, people always ask me, you might be happy to, you know, be out of that area. And I'm like, no, that's my home, right? And I, like, even that I'm studying in a good university, I have greatest opportunity, but at the end, I would like to go back in my area and work on things that aren't, you know, good. Or, of course, in my area, people need so much opportunity to do and become who they want to in the future. So I think I would really like to, you know, be part of the community, because yes, there are, you know, NGOs and stuff, but they don't know the whole story. They are just an outsider. But for me, I know my community much better than them, and I would love to make some changes, you know, for sex workers. As you said, from the cops, we struggle a lot in the area. They're supposed to protect us, but the totally opposite.
How does one deal with that, Jayashree?
It's very tough. Once you know that they have the authority, they have a power, you know, in the in India, sex work is legal, but solicitation is not legal. So that is where, you know, they take advantage. Like, even if they will have sex with police, they will have sex with sex workers, and they will refuse to pay. And it's not fair. It's a sex worker's right to receive the money once she has done her work. But it doesn't work that way. And if a sex worker is refusing to pay, so they'll put in some false case and make some, you know, rubbish case, and they'll just try to deal with the situation that how can. And it's, I think it's also a man ego issue that we have in the community. Like, you are a woman and you are a sex worker, how you can, you know, ask me for money, and I'm the police, in fact. So I think the ego thing, it has been a lot troubling in the red light area.
What about socializing, Jayashree? I mean, do your friends, all of them, you know, do you bring them over home? Like how most normal college kids are, they, you know, they get together at home. Does that also happen with you and the rest of your friends?
So right now, Kranti is not in the red light area and my college is in Andhra Pradesh. So I definitely can't bring them more. What I can do is, you know, do a workshop with them and tell them about who I am, which I already did. But in the school times, of course, after till 7th, I have studied in a BMC school, Marathi medium. But then also I used to be afraid of, I think in BMC school, it was most of my friends, because, you know, rich people's kids, of course, prefer to go in the not government private school, but it was all of my friends from the red light area. We were together in the BMC school. But when I moved out to 8th grade and started doing my private school, but then it was very tough to even open up, as I said. So bringing them home, it wasn't even in the question. So yeah.
So coming back to Trina, how does one engage, you know, with rescue and rehabilitation, you know, where the parents are involved, you know, because as you're talking about trafficking here and these are minor children. So how do you, you know, go about it when such a situation arises?
So like I said, for all the girls we have, their mothers have willingly handed over custody to us, and we continue to engage with the mothers and have great relationships with them. We always tell the girls to maintain the relationship. The girls visit the red light area, they visit wherever their mothers are living. The mothers come over. Sometimes we've done programs with the mothers as well. And so the mothers are able to see how their daughters are growing, the opportunities they are getting. So they're very happy, and there's consent in the whole situation. And that's how we've created the system, so that, you know, we don't have to face any conflict with the family.
What about during this pandemic, you know, with the healthcare system? That must also be a challenge, Trina.
Absolutely. We started getting calls from a lot of our mothers, including Jayashree's mother, actually, as an example, and other sex workers in the red light area during the pandemic, because, you know, sex workers are our daily wage laborers as well. But of course, we're absent sort of in that larger conversation about daily wage laborers and migrant workers. And there was no, you know, either government or civil society relief reaching the sex workers. And so our girls actually at Kranti led a lot of relief work. For 100 days, we distributed more than 300 cooked meals Because a lot of people don't have access to kitchens either. They would be eating, like, say, in a thela or something. But, you know, now that doesn't exist. So we distributed, the girls cooked, packed every day, would go out and auto distribute meals. We distributed dry monthly rations to about 3,000 families in the red light area. And, you know, in a way, the pandemic showed us that what we had set out to do at Kranti is happening. Because, you know, we've always said that these girls can be the best leaders and change agents in their communities. And the girls really did take up ownership and lead all this relief work. Like, the girls were, you know, leading yoga, dance, Zumba, meditation classes online, for which people were donating money. And that's the money they were using to do the relief work. So they really led it all. And it showed why it's so important to have leaders from the community, right? Because
no, it's very
when there are people not in the community, we sort of ignored it and forgot about it and were blind to it, right? It's because these girls are from the community that they saw the need and were able to do the relief work needed.
When we're talking about CSR that is taken up by corporates, I mean, I would like to believe that if you have a very, very large organization that does a huge amount of funding for you, you know, a whole lot of issues can be taken up with a very, very deeper impact actually among the people. So do Indian companies, are they open to, you know, doing CSR activities in the red light areas?
In our experience, we found it quite challenging to work with corporate social responsibility wings, because it is the work they fund is co-branding for the company, and trafficking or anti-trafficking is not always the branding that companies
want to be associated
That's
with, right?
One challenge. And I understand that. I understand that. The other challenge is that...
Why would you say you understand that, Tina?
I mean, like I said, because it is branding for the companies at the end of the day, and, you know, trafficking is an issue that is taboo. And I get that companies don't want to co-brand. I mean, it would have been wonderful if they did in an ideal world. Of course, it would have been wonderful in an ideal world.
Them. It begins with they making this. I mean, this is so empowering. I mean, I'm so impressed with the work that you're doing, because, you know, the minute we bring about change among people in society who do not have the voice, you know, is where change will begin. And that's would be the real true CSR work that companies would do, you know. So it really saddens me that, you know, you have difficulty in getting this going through. So how do you see yourself being funded in the, you know, I'm sure this would be a challenge, right?
So we are mostly funded by individuals who we have, you know, built relationships with over many years. They're almost like family to us. You know, they know our girls well. They come home, the girls go over to their place. And I think that's worked well for us, because you really see the magic of Kranti from the inside, right? When you meet our girls, when you talk to them. And that's not something we can communicate on a funding proposal. And therefore, the most of our funding has come from supportive individuals.
Okay. Tina, just we would be coming to the end of our podcast. So, you know, as I come to an end, I'd like to make a point, you know, for our listeners that we have tons to do, you know, as a society and as a community and as a country, because, you know, there are sex workers and this sort of business is still such a taboo that people don't want to talk about it, you know. With more than 23,000 victims that were rescued in 2016, of which 61% or 14.13 were children and 39% adults. Of the 14,183 children, 61% were boys and 39% girls. And you and me have not even begun talking about the boys, you know. And yes, because you see, there are boys also who are completely broken, you know, with the trauma that they go through, you know. And so, you know, we need to come together. And I think as individuals and members of civil society, you know, and me, and I'm sure with, you know, people whoever are listening in would definitely work towards creating more halla about the trafficking in India, you know, and also being inclusive of gender, because I would like to believe that even boys need to be addressed, you know, in a society where they're so marginalized. So last, before we end the show, Tina, please tell me, what is it that you dream of in the next 3 or 4 years with Kranti? And are you looking at a Bangalore chapter? And right now you're only in Bombay, am I right?
Yes, our home is in Bombay. That's the only place we have a home, but our girls are all over. Jay, she's actually in Bangalore right now as she's speaking to you, and she's going to go to her college campus in Andhra Pradesh. We have girls studying in the US and Italy and Delhi and Dehradun. So we have that everywhere. But yes, our home is only in Bombay.
So would you be looking at having more Kranti offices and more Kranti homes in...
No, Mahuda, short answer is no. That is not how we see us scaling Kranti. Scaling Kranti and spreading our work does not mean more homes and more number of girls. For us, what that means is scaling this belief in society that girls and boys coming from marginalized backgrounds have this great potential. They have the potential to do whatever they want to do, and they have the potential to be leaders who go back and improve their own communities. And that's the faith and belief that we want to scale in society. And so towards that, what we are going to be doing over the next 3 or 4 years is take our curriculum, our leadership and social justice education curriculum that we put our girls through, that we believe is instrumental in transforming them into social leaders. We want to take that curriculum to other organizations who are already doing great work, say in terms of mainstream education or other things. They're already doing that great work, and we want to layer our curriculum within their work. So we are creating more and more community leaders.
Fantastic. So we have Trina Talukdar. To me, she's a goddess, you know, who's able to fight the trafficking mafia, to be there and rehabilitate more girls. So I wish you loads of luck and great, great future with all the girls that you've rehabilitated. And I'm sure this is going to spread all across, and there would be many more people who would like to be part of Kranti. Thank you so much, Jayashree. And now that you're in Bangalore, I would love to meet up with you if you're here today and tomorrow. And thank you so very much for being in our podcast today. Thank you.